prophet who many of you will know about called Elijah. And it was in very dark times for Israel. The king was Ahab, who was an evil king, and he'd taken Israel, and the Israelites had taken themselves right away from God. And one day Elijah decides to pick a fight with 450 prophets of the false god Baal. And he challenges them. And he says, if Baal's God, we'll worship him, and if God's God, we'll worship him. Let's put it to the test. And he arranges for them to get two bulls. The prophets of Baal have one bull, and they've got to chop it into pieces. They've got to put wood on the altar, but they mustn't light the wood. And Elijah says, and then I'll do the same. And the prophets of Baal chop up their bull, they put it on the wood, and they start to dance around and cut themselves and prophesy and shout. And Elijah starts to take the mickey. He says, perhaps your God's asleep. Maybe he's gone on a journey. He's having a rest. Nothing happens. And then it's Elijah's turn. And he chops up the bull. He puts the wood on the altar. And he says to the people, get four big pitchers of water and chuck it on the wood. And he says, then do it again. Do it again. It's all soaked. And then it says, at the time of sacrifice, Elijah stepped forward and prayed, Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel, and I am your servant, and have done all these things at your command. And he says, then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the soil, and also licked up the water in the trench. When all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. Can we go on to the next slide? This, if you like, is my text for this morning. Many of you know it well. It's Hebrews 11:1. Faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. If we go on to the next slide, this is a great quotation from R.T. Kendall. Faith is about waiting on God while he hides himself. And Tom Wright said, faith is looking at God and trusting him for everything, while hope is looking at the future and trusting God for it. But I especially love that first one. Faith is about waiting on God while he hides himself. Do you know that one? Have you experienced that in your life? It's so true. And the next one, this isn't anybody famous, this is just me. We can go on to the next slide. Faith is looking at the circumstances and saying, I don't care what the circumstances look like. I believe God. And if we go on to the next slide, Marshall, you'll see that I got a bit excited when you were talking. Look at the second one there. So the first one, it's easy for us to look at the circumstances first and then wonder what God might do. Peter walked on the water, as Marshall reminded us, but started to sink when he looked down. He looked at the circumstances and he thought, oh, hang on, I can't do this. And it's probably like one of those cartoons where the runs off the edge of a cliff and then suddenly realizes there's nothing beneath him and goes down. He looked at the circumstances and he sank. Elijah wasn't like that. He made the circumstances so impossible by chucking all that water on it that unless God intervened, it was completely impossible. He deliberately made the circumstances difficult. Next slide. This is possibly our problem as Christians. We believe God did miracles for great people of faith like Elijah, but when it comes to provision for us, do we believe that he'll do it in our lives? It's a real problem. It's easy to read the Bible and say, that's wonderful. Look what God did for Elijah. But then you say, well, what about me? Do I have the same belief? Think about the book of Acts, the time of the Acts. Jesus had ascended back to heaven. They were on their own now. The disciples and the apostles were on their own. But of course they weren't. Jesus had sent the Spirit on the church. I had an email the other day from the Martin Lloyd-Jones Trust. And this trust is gradually bringing out recordings from Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones, probably the greatest preacher of the 20th century. If you get the chance to listen to them, do. It's just fantastic stuff. And it says they've just started to do the recordings of his teaching on the book of Acts. And it says, in today's sermon, Dr. Lloyd-Jones reminds us that the work of the Holy Spirit is entirely God-given, and that all views of Christianity that highlight man's work as opposed to God's grace are not biblically based. And you can just imagine the doctor saying that in his wonderful Welsh accent. It's not about what the people did. It's not about what the apostles and the disciples did. It's about what God did at the time of the Acts. He built his church. He did extraordinary miracles. The miracles and signs and wonders continued as the church expanded. And Dave prayed in the prayer meeting earlier today, for me, Christianity is all about miracles. And in a very real sense, it is. Just think about this. The prophet Elijah met a widow of Zarephath. And he said to her, what have you got? And she said, I've got some flour and some oil. And he said, bring me the flour and oil. And they continued to have flour and oil. It just reproduced itself. It didn't reproduce itself. God reproduced it. And then Elisha, the prophet who came after Elijah, did a very similar thing. He met, I think it was another widow, actually. And he said, she was desperate in many ways. She had some oil. And he said to her, bring me jugs. Bring me lots of receptacles. And he prophesied, as long as you keep bringing jugs, the oil will keep coming. And it did. And she must have gone out to all of her friends and neighbors and said, quick, give me jugs. We've got this free supply of everlasting oil. It's not going to stop until my jugs run out. And then, of course, the jugs did run out and the oil stopped. And then think about Jesus. The miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 was very similar, wasn't it? The widow at the time of Elijah just had some flour and some oil. The disciples with Jesus just had some bread and some fish. But it kept coming as long as it needed to. And there must have been people in the crowd thinking, I recognize this. Thinking of Elijah and Elisha. God doing a reproductive miracle, reproducing bounty. And then the miracles continued in the time of the Acts. They didn't dry up. Going on to the next slide. I want to talk about things that have happened in our life just briefly this morning. I don't like talking about myself, but I do like giving testimony. And Viv and I always find that moving house is a time when God tests our faith. And it gets to the point where you think, oh God, I wish you'd stop. This is getting so difficult. We moved here to Norfolk in 2009. And it was really hard. It took us about 2 years to move. And I sort of had a suspicion at the beginning that things might not be easy. So I invited one of the prophets in the church and his wife to dinner. It's a great way of getting a prophet to give you some prophetic information. And he did. He said, it's going to take a long time. But the reason is not because God doesn't want you to go to Norfolk, but because there is something to sort out at the other end first. And it turned out to be a difficult personal situation here that did need to be sorted out, and it would take time. And we held on to that prophecy, and he also prophesied other things. So we clung on to this, but it took 2 years. And then one day I was in church, when we were in our church in Worcester at the time, when we were right in the thick of all of this. And I was saying to my friend Bill, I was just explaining what was happening. The property market had just collapsed. The value of our property had come down suddenly by a ridiculous amount. And things weren't working out here. We couldn't find a house. And I was telling Bill all of this, and then I noticed he was grinning at me. And I said, why are you grinning? And he said, chuck some more water on. Do you get it? And of course, he's absolutely right. When things like this happen, it shows that God is in business. And it builds your faith. And then, the end of last year, our son Jonathan, some of you will have noticed we've got family over here. This is our daughter Jane and our son-in-law Isaac and their daughter Lily. So I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about our son. I can do that because he's not here. And even if he was, he's been an elder's kid all his life, so he's always been used as a sermon illustration. They were in Birmingham. They lived in Birmingham. They're in a New Frontiers church plant there. And they felt God calling them towards the end of last year to go and be part of a new church plant in County Durham. They both went to Durham University. They had lots of friends there. And they knew God was calling them to be part of this new church plant. They felt it desperately. And things were difficult. They were told, you won't get a mortgage, because our son by that stage had started working for an American company. And all the mortgage brokers said, you won't get a mortgage. They won't give mortgages to people who work for US companies. That turned out, well, everybody prayed. That hurdle was knocked down. They got a mortgage offer. They put their house on the market, and they sold it the same day. So they were thinking, well, this is great. Now, backtracking a bit, when they first started to talk about moving, I was trying to encourage them by saying, whenever we move, God makes it really difficult for us. And I didn't remind them of that when things started to go wrong, but I knew. So they found that they sold the house immediately. About a week later, they found a house to buy. They didn't just go to the first house they liked. They went to others, and they said, we found this really nice house, but we felt God saying that's not the one. And then they found the one that they believed God was saying was the one. So that was all fine. The offer was accepted. It all started to happen. And then it went wrong. The solicitor acting for their buyer was completely and utterly useless. I can say that. I'm a solicitor. He was useless. And what should have happened in a few weeks, because they had a first-time buyer, they were buying an empty house, took, I think, a couple of months. And they started to get desperate. I mean, really desperate, to the point where they're saying, we know God is in this, but we just don't understand what he's doing. We just want to be in Chesterley Street. Joy is 8-plus months pregnant by the stage where it's really starting to just not do anything at all. And in the last week or so, God put a real burden on me for this situation. And I was praying a lot, and I was talking to Jonathan a lot. And it got to the point where contracts had to be exchanged on a Thursday for completion on the Friday. Otherwise, their sellers were saying, we're going to have to pull out. We can't just keep waiting like this. And I was awake late into the night. I went downstairs, and I was praying. Because I'd said to Jonathan, this is God. This is what God does. The fact that it's going right up to the wire almost certainly means this is God. And God reassured me as I prayed that night that it was him. And if we can go on to the next slide. I started to think of the words of this song. I don't know it very well. Oh, I've heard 1,000 stories of what they think you're like, but I've heard the tender whisper of love in the dead of night. And you tell me that you're pleased and that I'm never alone. You're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. It's who I am, it's who I am, it's who I am. And God was reassuring me, if you think you love them, and if you think you're concerned about the situation, you're interceding for them, how do you think I feel as their Heavenly Father? And he just reassured me, yes, it's me. And he gave me some things to say to them, which I said to them the next day, one of them being something they specifically had to do. And it all happened the next day. They exchanged contracts. They moved on the following day, on the Friday. But the thing that broke it for me was the reminder that God is Father, and that we have to live in the good of his fatherhood and love, and the faith that it gives us to know that he is a good and loving Father. He's got our best interests at heart. And all of these things that make things difficult are just water being thrown on. So let's go on to the next slide. Real life situations, houses, jobs, money. And I haven't quite formulated this yet, but I think you can either live as a child of God in such a way that you give God all of the areas of your life, or you can compartmentalize some areas. And I've seen too many Christians who think about moving or think about jobs without actually coming to God and saying, Lord, this is part of my life with you. It's not just my journey in life. It's you. You know where I'm going to live. Have you ever thought that because God is outside time and because he's known you since before the foundation of the world, he's always known where you're going to live all the way through your life? He knows now the next place you're going to live. He knew that property before you existed. He knew it before it was built. Sometimes I like to think that he's had houses built or tweaked, especially for us, by the builders. I used to think that about our 16th century cottage. God knew that when that place was being built, 400 years later, Bruce and Viv and their children would move in. It would be nice to have a bread oven there. Bruce and Viv will like that. I mean, it sounds silly, but it's true. So our son and his wife were quite right to say, we want to find the house that God has got for us. And I hope you do that. Every time you move house, you must do that. Don't compartmentalize that part of your life. It's important to God where you live. He determines where we live, it says in Acts. And I think if we're compartmentalizing something like the place where we live, our job, our money, we're actually saying to God, okay, you're my father in certain areas of life. But those areas, I'm going to make it on my own. And in those areas, then, we're living as an orphan. And we don't have to. We're not orphans. We're children of God. He's our good father. And all you have to do is say to him, Lord, I want you to make the decisions. I want you to lead me to my new house. But don't be surprised when he said, thank you. Now I'm going to chuck some water on it. Because it so often goes right up to the wire, to the point where unless God has done it, it's pretty much humanly impossible that it'll happen. And people say, why? Why does it always happen at the last minute? Because God is chucking on water to show that he's God. And I noticed on the news sheet, when you get a chance, have a look through this. We've got a great new preaching series coming up about the Exodus. And one of the titles, Sunday the 25th of whatever that is, September, now we are free. Why all this trouble? Because God's chucking on water. I haven't got time to talk about this. Houses, jobs, money, church life, there are other things, health, relationships. You could go on and on and on. Don't live as an orphan in any of those areas where you've got problems. Say to him, you're my good father. I give this to you. Please, please, Lord, please, good father. Sort it out. I mentioned on that slide importance of the prophetic. I've discovered that for me to have faith about something, I need to know that God is in it. And therefore, I ask my prophetic friends, is God saying anything? And always, they say, yeah, this is what God says. Prophetic people are very good at listening to God and talking to their friends and feeding you. And then that forms a basis for my faith. We knew we were coming to Norfolk. We knew it was going to take a long time. We knew there were things to sort out at this end. We got frustrated. There were tears. There was a bit of metaphorical stamping of feet saying, God, why aren't you doing this faster? But we knew because God had spoken. And unless you're living as an orphan in all these areas, you look to God, don't look to the circumstances. It says in Hebrews 11, Sarah herself received power to conceive even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised, therefore from one man and him as good as dead. And what's that saying? It's saying Abraham was so old, he was almost dead, but Sarah was so convinced that God had spoken that the line was going to come through her son, that she believed, against all hope, that God was going to give her a son. It was physically, utterly impossible, but she believed. And read through the whole of Hebrews 11. It's all like that. These are people who believed God against the circumstances, irrespective of the circumstances. So the next slide. Hebrews 11 is all about encouraging us to keep our eyes on God for the future, reminding us of all these people of faith who've gone before. It says in verse 13, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. And it goes on to say that people who say such things show that they're looking for a country of their own. If they'd been thinking of the country they left, they would have had the opportunity to return. They could have gone back to where they were. But it says instead they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he's prepared a city for them. What's all this about? We as the church are not supposed to be just looking at our immediate circumstances. The church is a people on a journey, and that journey is to a city in the future. We live on that journey. It should be up to God, not up to us. Do you understand? We've got a vision together. We're on a journey together. Next slide. And Hebrews goes on. Chapter 11 leads obviously into chapter 12. And his conclusion is, let's run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. How do we do all this? Well, we fix our eyes on Jesus, because he's the one who's died to make our relationship with God as our good Father possible. So many things I've had to miss out here for lack of time. What about prayer? Prayer is so important. We've got to bring our pitchers, like that lady with Elisha. We have to bring our jugs. Prayer is about bringing the jug and saying, Lord, I need you to fill this jug. I haven't got any oil. Please put some oil in the jug for me. We've got a building project coming up. One of the areas I put on that slide earlier was church life. Faith in church life very often revolves around money. Now, I've been in church leadership for decades, and for almost all that time, I've never known a situation where we can look forward and say, we've got enough money. We've always looked forward and said, okay, it's looking a bit rocky, we're not meeting the budget. But you know what? There's always been enough oil. It's never dried up, because we've kept coming with the jugs. And my experience is the oil is always there. You can never see rivers and tides of oil coming towards you. It doesn't work like that. You go with the jug, and the oil keeps coming as long as you bring the jugs. And you'll hear shortly from our excellent treasurer, Jim. He's not here, so I can talk about him as well. He's a wise man. He's an excellent, excellent treasurer. And he's going to say, there isn't enough money. Shouldn't be doing a building project. But he won't say it like that. He'll say it with faith. Humanly speaking, it's the usual situation, but the oil will keep coming. I promise you that. But we've got to approach this in faith. We need to be a people of faith who say the oil will keep coming because God's promised. And in your own life, with money, one of my favorite quotations is from John Wesley, who said the last part of a man to be converted is his wallet. That is usually the last compartment. The last compartment where we say, look, it doesn't make any sense for me to hand over control of my money to God. But until you do, your wallet's unconverted. There's no time to talk about that. I'd love to expand on it. Faith is about waiting on God while he hides himself. I just want to pray for us. Can we stand, please? Lord, I pray for every individual here that you will give us faith in our own lives, Lord. Lord, that for people thinking about moving house, thinking about changing job, with health problems, with family problems, with relationship problems, with fears, Lord, that you'll speak to them as their good, good Father, and that you'll, Lord, you'll gently open up that area of their life and then move in and show your glory, Lord. I pray, Lord, that as a church, as we move into this new term, you will give us faith. Lord, faith for money, faith for the building project, faith for all of the promises that you've made to us about the future of this church, the call that you've put on us, Lord, the role that you've given us in this county and further afield. Lord, will you speak to us and stir up faith in us? Lord, help us
Help us as we deal with the God who sometimes hides himself, that we will always believe, will always approach in faith, will always approach in prayer, will always keep coming with those jugs and holding them out, believing that you'll keep filling them with oil, Lord. With man this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. Amen.